Alright, okay, I'll do the opening.
Hmm?
I'll count to 12.
Yeah, that's a reasonable number.
Fair enough. No, I'll count to 5 and then I'll start. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
News, infos, stuff from all over the sea.
Simon, the radio show with your host, Axel Anaki.
So, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to once again another Zine Radio podcast show. And we're back with Axel of Brainstorm and Vincenzo of I Still Think Conspiracy, because I haven't checked the last time. And myself,
you're Otto. A lazy badass.
Yes, I'm very lazy. I'm sorry, Vincenzo. And me, Oki. And we're back with information and talk and stuff about the demo scene and other stuff that might come up.
Yeah, so, we did screw up pretty well in the meantime, didn't we?
Yeah, we made an episode and it was lost and it's not here. So this is just the second episode.
Could we blame Vincenzo on that, probably?
We can blame Vincenzo because
I think it would be reasonable.
His computer broke down, so it's all Vincenzo's fault.
Yeah,
no, that's kind of mean.
Yeah.
So this show will cover recent demo parties and stuff that happens in the demo scene at these parties, mainly Assembly and Evoke and Wensley. And we have a very special guest.
Oh, yes.
And that is?
That is Kevin Mack. And he's the visual effects supervisor for many, many movies. And he also won an Oscar, an Academy Award, if you like, for his work on What Dreams May Come with Robin Williams and Cuba Gooding Jr. This was in 1998. But in the meantime, I mean, he made visual effects for many, many movies, from Army of Darkness to The Abyss, True Lies, RoboCop 3, Into the Woods.
Probably not as proud as moment as RoboCop 3. All the movies he did, like Fight Club and Vanilla Sky, and you say yeah. RoboCop 3, like it's like...
Yeah, I just had to, you know? It's just,
I think the man needs money to eat as well, so we can forgive.
Yeah. We cannot blame him. But he also did stuff on Fifth Element, yeah, Fight Club you mentioned, Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise, Big Fish, Ghost Rider, and the recent Speed Racers with Matrix, the Kopski Brothers.
Yes.
So,
and he participated in the SIGGRAPH panel discussion.
Yes.
And it was very well. That went very well, I heard.
Yeah, so I heard as well. IQ and Kuzma reported some pretty interesting stuff. IQ was really digging the chat there. The Aztec was also giving me some feedback that it was really going very well, but of course time was lacking in the end and they would
talk
some more about it, but yeah, maybe we can repeat this next year. We'll see.
All right. So we got a quick interlude.
Yeah, so we'll have him later on here in the show if all goes well, otherwise we'll be doomed.
And, yes, well there will be Kevin Mack in this episode one way or another.
One way or another.
So shall we now first start with some music and then kick off talking about parties?
Yes, we should do this.
Okay, and I propose we start with 1995, Out of the Blue, because it was used in SIGGRAPH.
Yeah, actually they opened the panel discussion with showing 1995 in Coors, and so they had some basic for the discussion going on there. So let's kick off with some little bit shirt here.
Yes, it's a good scene anthem, so let's start with that and then we talk about parties.
Yes, so we'll be right back.
We're back after the great song by Little Richard. It's always so catchy. It makes me dance every time I hear it. So parties.
Yeah, I'm still weakling here. Just like, you know, John Travolta style.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like with all the right moves, like like Travolta does. But just parties. It was a heavy, heavy summer party weeks that we had, starting with Assembly, which was very interesting.
Yeah, quite some surprises, no?
Yes, yes. It was from surprising entries to surprising results in the competitions. Entry-wise, I say everybody probably noticed that already. But first, let's talk about the stuff that stood out, and then we can not talk about the Brilliant Wild entry from Half Bit Cheese.
Yep.
Which was,
amazing.
Amazing, yes, actually, it's only one word. That was pretty bloody good, that was. Yeah, these guys they've been growing. I mean, I didn't really know him. He's been releasing stuff at Assembly for like 4 years now.
Yeah, but I mean, who are all those animators? I mean, there's a huge gang of people.
It's Finns, it's like really talented Finns. And then they come together and then they start, and then last year, He broke through, basically, and then was seen with the whole real-time demo wannabe. And then this year they had that Roadfield field trip, which is absolutely amazing. And every member making his own car.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
But I still envy D-Fast for that huge stretch limousine.
But in the end, it's not D-Fast in the limousine, because it's the small car behind it. And that's actually, and of course, that's the humor that I liked in it. It's like this whole kind of stabs to themselves. And
yeah, really nice jokes in there as well, throughout the whole production. It's so really nice homage as well for MFX, Bob Rausch, etc. So it's really,
yeah,
really great fun.
Good stuff, and he released a high definition, high quality version of it without audio skips, which is very, very nice.
Yeah, actually, I think the only part that I didn't like that much in the production was actually the song, because I thought, you know, back in real time demo wannabe, it was much more fitting in my point of view, but I'm not sure whether I'm completely alien on that. But.
I like the flow, but I like the hip hop more. The real time demo wannabe and the stuff they did for Breakpoint, the Donuts one.
Yeah.
That soundtrack is like really pumping and that helps. But yeah, this was not all too bad. Especially when the airplane in the beginning it takes off and then you get a break in the music and it all goes back to cruising. As the village people said before, cruising is good.
Cruising is
good. So there you have it.
Could be a motto or what?
I actually have a song called Cruising, so that's why. And then
Tom Cruising.
Like Tom Cruising. I don't know, Kevin Mack might get angry if we talk about
Tom Cruising.
Or he joins.
He's not going to stick with us, is he?
You can ask him about it because he worked on Interview with the Vampire, so he might actually have met Tom Cruise. We can ask him if Tom Cruise is actually crazy.
Yeah, probably.
Might be.
No, probably we can ask him. Not probably he's crazy, but yeah, also.
But okay, Assembly still. There was a pretty strong 4KB competition, I must say. Of course.
TBC Access, right? TBC Portal Process?
Portal Process was it, yeah. It skipped my mind. It was TBC and Portal Process.
It's puzzling, isn't it?
That was good stuff.
Yeah, I was like sitting here and at the end, I was like, oh my god, the whole thing exploding. I was like, fuck yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, the bumping soundtrack, I think it was done by Purex. Very, very nice, nicely bouncing for a 4K. And Smash, of course, did his own thing.
That was quite a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah, that by himself, 4K entry that he did. And it was not all too bad. So, and then, of course, Fairlight was back in the 64K compo, which is the release we have to talk about for Assembly. After saying that they would never do 64Ks again, coming back with the most high-toned NFO file in the world, saying after we stopped, everything started sucking. So, I'll show you how it works. And they did.
Like
they
the
did.
Attitude? I mean, seriously, this was the attitude that was missing from the demo scene for quite some while. I like it being back.
I mean, the whole arrogance is TBL does it perfectly as well, and it's. I mean, it works, especially when you pull it off. And the Panic Room was very, very good.
Really, some really nifty effects in there, I think.
Stressing like the new technology to the limit, very much hardware.
I wonder really how much, you know, how long they really worked on it in the end, because this must be some really in-depth fine-tuning in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, I heard that it was supposed to be for Breakpoint, but they didn't make it. We should get Smash into an episode one day and ask him about 64K making.
Yeah, actually, I asked him whether he could join us tonight, but he didn't reply. Damn, Matt, what's up with you?
Hey, Smash is a busy man. But we'll,
yeah,
we'll,
busy man. Busy man in the UK.
In England. You know how it goes in England with pints of beer and lager and crisps.
Yeah, he's probably hanging out in a pub or something, but we'll have him in one of the upcoming shows for sure.
We should ask him. And of course, Reed's music was bouncing as it was with samples in the 64K soundtrack, which is...
Yeah, you mentioned the track last time we recorded this show, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, again, nothing happened. But yeah, the Rakim lyrics encoded. Of course, the message has been a long time. Shouldn't have left you, which is perfectly fitting.
Absolutely great.
So yeah, assembly was
also very much intentional as well. I think really enjoying this.
Absolutely, like showing everybody like what's going on. But no, it worked. I think it was probably the most kicking release at assembly. One of the most unexpected kicking releases, especially because they kept it secret as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they went through quite some hassle to actually keep it secret, because I heard they even had to convince the team from the assembly TV, who usually have the entries beforehand so they can talk about them, to actually not have this entry forwarded to the assembly TV team, so not even they knew, you know, what would be coming up. And that was, I think that's quite impressive.
Yeah, that was the whole studio talk after the 64K combo was pretty fun as well, with an absolutely smash and the awesomeness of Fairlight. So
yes, so let's hear it for some Reed, I guess.
Yes, Reed, let's play the music to Panic Room, and then we'll back with talk about Evoke and Wednesday.
Alrighty. Alright. We'll be back.
We'll be right back.
One, two, three. So, we're back after music. Good music from a good 64K. And let's talk about Evoke. And I went to Evoke, so I was there.
Are you sunburned?
No. the weather wasn't that bad, actually. But it was a fun party. Absolutely some. I met a lot of fun people. For me, it was fun to meet Kenny Beltry, who was there, which is an old-time musician I used to talk to on IRC a lot about music, like late 90s. And I never met him. And he was there, so it was good fun to meet him, have a beer, and talk about stuff. And as Evoke is always like a meeting party kind of thing. But of course, Evoke also kind of had the problem that Assembly had that we didn't talk about during the Assembly talk, the lack of releases. Assembly had a 6th demo compo, from which were not really like famous groups entered. Play Psycho did a demo for Assembly, which was really good, New Norwegian guys. Yep. But the rest was kind of lacking. And Evoke kind of had the same problem.
Yeah, actually, it kind of proved the chat that we had beforehand about, you know, whether NV scene was having any impact on this. But after Assembly, we hadn't been so sure about this. But with Evoke having been not that extensively gifted with releases on the demo compo side, I thought, well, okay, probably a lot of those are going to show up at indie scene.
Yeah, but it seems so. I mean, Evoke always was the more like outside hanging drinking party. The releases were good sometimes. I mean, Plastic released Final Edition there, but I mean, it's still a smaller party. But this year was kind of sad that the gimmick entry of all time gimmick entries ever, Robert Jarig, actually won the bloody demo compo.
Yeah, what's wrong with this? God damn it! What's happening to Evoke there?
Yeah, it was the most. I mean, and not to disrespect the rest of the entries, especially PS, because he probably want to kill me that I don't understand his art demos. I must say, his demo is not all too bad and should have won. But Robert Jarig actually probably was the most entertaining for people, so they voted for it.
Right.
Yeah, that's really weird, and actually brings the end of an era, but not really.
not really.
At one point, yeah, I'll explain a bit about Robert Jarig, because there might be people that have no idea, like you, for example, as you told me.
I
was talking to Rob recently, and he's kind of like not really pissed off, but he was kind of like, everybody will know Arby only by Robert Jarig, but they did so much more. You know, I will also give them now the opportunity to say, watch other productions, especially Please the Cookie Thing and all the other stuff that they made.
Outside Exploration.
Yes, because it's actually very good stuff. But yeah, Robert Jarig was made in 1999 by Ile of Aardbei as a birthday present to Rob, just for his birthday. And then for kicks and laughs, they entered it in the competition at Ambience 2000, where they also entered Please the Cookie Thing. And it was a joke, and we laughed about it, and that was it. And then a few years later, I don't actually remember how it happened, but I think Ile re-released it at Breakpoint 2003 for the first time, just for the fun of it. Just like, we'll see what happens if they play it, and they played it again, and we laughed. And at that point, we made it a gimmick to release it at any demo party. And do know that Aardbei actually hasn't any part in this anymore. Aardbei has never released it again after Ile's second try, but other people do it. And it used to go like, we made up a Dutch name, and then we released it under the random singer from country X, and then Dream Records not, and then a singer name from that country that was there. So I think it started at Breakpoint with random German demo scene and not Kebby, and then we used all kinds of different names for that, and then it started to become a gimmick over and over, and it got disqualified, and then people started dancing to it, and people still played it, and it was like, it annoys the hell out of a lot of people, and other people enjoy dancing to it because it's a very catchy tune, which is actually made by an old classmate of Ile, and he is not a demo scener, and the guy has probably no idea that his song is like very famous and people sing along to it.
Actually, it made it to German television. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
God. That was pretty amazing.
But yeah, and it was actually quite fun that Rob told me he got an email from a German journalist asking about the demo because he saw that it won Evoke, and he probably thought it was a very good demo because it won. Like, can you tell me more? And Rob was like, why? God, leave me alone. Enough of it already. But yeah, the thing was that Ile once said it should be entered until it wins somewhere.
Okay.
It won. But purists say the original version should win, and they played the 64K conversion because the original version doesn't work on the Vista because it's nearly 10 years old. Okay. So there is like a loophole that we are still allowed to enter it, because it still hasn't really won.
Bastards.
Yes, everybody will hate us for it.
We have to endure it.
I'm not sure what's going to happen, but it was good fun to actually see it win. And I got an envelope from the Evoke organizing awarding us €0. And actually, fair enough. Because winning money with that would be very unfair. But that was...
Did they ever actually give an explanation for the €0? Just because it was
a
joke?
Yeah, because it's like, it's a it should have been disqualified. It's a re-release.
Okay.
And it's not really fair to give money for it at this time. I mean, fair enough. I mean, I got a t-shirt for Elo that I still have to give to him. But, I mean, you made the thing nearly 10 years ago. I mean, enough is enough.
So the second prize was given... Basically, the second place was given all the prize then?
Or? I think they spread out the money.
Okay.
A lot of competitions, the people that actually deserve it. And there was very good music competitions at Evoke, I must say. And there was... So the music is actually an anecdote for me. I entered a very cheesy polka chip tune because like I always do when I'm at Evoke, I'm looking through my hard drive for small songs that are really old just to enter in a tiny music competition because they have that at Evoke, a 64 kilobyte compressed mod music. And I found this ridiculous polka that I once made, which is based on the ringtone of an old Dutch phone. And it was played in the competition. And then afterwards, all of a sudden it was played in the hall at Evoke. And I was like, what? Why are they playing my song again? And then Toby, XXX, came up to me and he was like, yes, I have to, your song was played because there was a guy from German radio that did a live port about Demo Scene and he wanted to have my song playing in the background because it had a Demo Scene feeling. And that was very hilarious to me.
A Demo Scene feeling, that's quite a...
Yeah, because it was very bleepy bloppy and he found it very amusing. And in the end, I won third place with it, so that was very cool. But that was my 15 minutes, 15 seconds of fame on German radio.
So that was Pocket Line Polka or what?
Yes, yes.
So you're Ahmed.
Yeah, well, I actually released it under a fake name because I didn't really know how it was going to be received. So it's like, if it's going to be received badly, I can say that.
You're such a chicken, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Especially when it comes to like releasing stuff. And I'm not familiar if you're familiar with Ahmed the Dead Terrorist.
No.
Oh, you're not?
No.
This is Ventriloquist from the States called Jeff Dunham. And he has one puppet, which is Ahmed the Terrorist, in his stand-up show. And Jamba, the cell phone ringtone company, actually now sells ringtones of that puppet.
Oh, okay.
And it's very annoying. So that's why I use that name, basically.
Actually, we should now like blame it on you and really play Pocket Line Polka, no?
You want to play it?
Yeah, well, I want to hear that.
Okay, I'll be honored. Okay, we play a bit of the Pocket Line Polka then, and then a bit of Robert Jarre's music, just to honor.
Yes, let's play both of those.
Yes, to honor the unknown man that made that song and made people hate it.
Okay, let's hear it for Pocket Line Polka.
We're back after some fun music from Evoke, and I completely forgot to mention that the third episode in the Scheisse saga was released. And we finally saw the man, kind of the man behind the mask, or helping the man behind the mask, which is GCO.
Yep.
That is actually semi-responsible for this nonsense. I must say that it weirded me out so much during the competition that I eventually decided I liked it. But well done, GCO, you completely weirded me the fuck out.
By the way, one thing I wanted to get back to was the 4K by Still. What do you think of it?
Oh, yes, yes. That was pretty good. I think it was a one-guy production.
So that was basically a reduced effect show from the Secret demo, or what do you think?
It could be. There's some part that left, or maybe the guy was working on it. It was pretty solid.
What do you think of the BitJam remix compo?
Music, oh, yes.
It worked pretty well. And it was quite a surprise that they won, actually, the alternative platforms compo, no?
Yeah, but that whole was kind of, I'm not really sure if, like, I mean, alternative platform for me is like demos on a different platform.
Hmm.
Not really a music disc under Windows.
This is quite some discussion, I think, you're at Evoke itself, no?
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. Decent music, and it's a nice competition and a very nice project itself that people remix demo songs, because you can never have enough remixes. But yeah, it's still, no offense to Wensley, we're going to talk about, but their game is a game under Windows. It's not necessarily an alternative platform thing.
Mm. It's rather
kind of sour about this competition, because there weren't any really, there was like a C64 joke entry and then some Windows stuff, and it's kind of all kind of flat.
Probably wiser to rename it to alternative production.
Yeah.
Instead of alternative platform.
Yeah. This is like different productions. I mean, all fair and square if you want to release it somewhere, but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that was Evoke. And then Wensley, of course, in Switzerland. Always cozy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually.
Didn't go.
I couldn't make my promise from the last trip, but yeah, unfortunately I couldn't attend. So sorry, Unlock. Sorry for the rest of the guys from Nuance, etc. I wanted to meet up there. Bobich from Four Seniors. I didn't really make it to the place, but I saw it had some pretty decent releases, though.
Yeah, there was some stuff, especially with the first time they had indeed remote entries.
Did you think judging from the results, do you think it had any impact that they opened up for remote entries? Because it didn't seem like it, really.
Yeah, it always has like decent enough releases, even though it's like always after Evoke and people already did stuff for Assembly and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, they had some, especially 4K procedural graphics, only had three entries.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Archie showing up in there. Yeah, that was really nice.
Probably remote. I don't know if he was there, then it's even more awesome. But yeah, that was very good. And the Godspeed entry by Quite Youth Uprising was very impressive. Car render in 4K.
Actually, judging from the results, the Youth Uprising entry was remote, and Archie actually was there.
Oh, really? Oh.
Otherwise, it would say remote entry. They had it in brackets. They listed it as remote entry. That's quite a good idea as well.
Oh, but Archie was at Evoke as well, so he was probably there. Sorry, Archie. Awesome.
Yeah, he's making a trip across Europe or one.
Ah, right. Excellent. So he was even there. He had a very cool entry as well. And what I liked is that in the 64K 4K compo, there was the Stroboholics entry, which actually was a demo at Evoke, a fun entry to fill up the compo. And a week later, they made a 4K out of it. And the thing is annoying as hell, but it's pretty impressive to just release a 4K a week afterwards. It's good fun.
Yeah, now you know what they did in between.
Yeah, it's like, we can do this, we can optimize it, we can make it better, faster, smaller, and even more flickering and blinky.
Yep. So I think Pinsley was quite a success, actually, because had quite a number of releases. The Nuance was kicking ass as well, once again.
A bit of controversy there as well, because as the whole thing unfolded in the Poet Commons, which is not the most viable place for information, but still, that they had a demo kit from NVIDIA.
Yeah,
but didn't want to release there and save their release or made a quick release for Wensley instead.
Right.
And now there's people already discussing, like, should they return their demo kit, and it's unfair, and gentlemen's agreement, and all kinds of talk that I think is kind of unnecessary for this kind of thing. Because, I mean, handing out demo kits is not a guarantee for a demo, I think.
And demo scenes are not gentlemen, so.
Yeah, you give away hardware, it's a risk. And as I said in the comments, I mean, NVIDIA knew that they were taking a risk. Mm. And they probably calculated this risk as well, because they handed out 60 of these things. So they have enough entries, at least. So right?
Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's still going to pay off for NVIDIA anyway, because they, you know, they have enough productions and even new ones. I mean, they produce something, right? So, and it runs on NVIDIA. And
yeah, I think if you have a kid, because I'm still kind of wary, especially after Evoke, as I said, and this is my personal opinion, that kind of NVIDIA bought releases for their party, because everybody is making entries for NVC, as it seems. And if that's, I'm still not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing that the Envision results have to show that. But I say to new ones, like, yeah, fair enough. I mean, it would be friendly if they'd return the kit like we didn't participate, but the kit was not a guarantee that they should participate anyway. And it's kind of, it's kind of like out there. It's not very nice that you take a kit and then don't use it for that party, but, well, yeah, it's a risk.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they will use the kit for next year. I mean, who knows? I mean,
yeah, who knows? And they're productive, so they make entries, and it's else. It's really like kind of NVIDIA buying releases by sending out kits. So, and I don't think that was their intention. Their intention was sending out hardware so that they would have good releases at their party. Fair enough. So yeah, stuff like this happens, I guess.
Yeah, I'm very curious what NVC is going to turn out. But maybe before we continue, let's hear it for some new ones.
Yeah, let's play the music new ones and maybe some other tunes behind it, just for the hell of it.
Yeah, just for the hell of it. Let's start with Ungol, though, from Noise Fever of New ones, the soundtrack of Ungol.
Here we go.
Yep, let's go.
And I'm quickly grabbing another beer.
Don't you dare.
I already have it.
You should record this, Vincenzo.
All right, shall we go back?
With the beer? Yeah, sure.
With the show?
I'm sorry, everyone. We cannot be really back because Oki is still in the fridge opening a beer.
Yeah, no, but I have my beer here. It goes.
And
that is
quite,
on me.
Quite good for a fake.
Yeah, that was me flipping the lid, and now I'm okay. Fair enough. We're back, and I'm quite wet from the beer, but
we're trying to be
serious radio. This is with your hosts, Axel of Brainstorm.
You remember your name?
No, I was going to bring you a proper another Axel of Brainstorm, Vincenzo of Conspiracy, and me, Aki. The sellout of the demo scene.
Actually, you have to do this right here, right now. Like, imitating the Scene.org Awards voice.
I think I just did.
Like, boy, connect.
It's good enough. I will go with Kevin Mac joins, and he can tell me if it sounds anything like a real film trailer. He's sad boy, because he's going to tell me it sucks. But yeah, we're back. Yeah, we're talking about parties and things that happened, and V scene leaving quite a mark on the summer demo party releases. And this is much food for conversation everywhere, which is
except
good.
Here.
Except here. Except here. We're going to talk about it now. I think because I'm still kind of wary. I still am about that whole NVIDIA thing. I'm still kind of watching it and thinking, like, what do they really want? And it's very nice that they give this much attention, but aren't we just really selling, maybe selling our souls quite too much? But I mean, fair enough. I mean, lots of people working for NVC, a party that, fair enough, if they didn't send out kits, they probably wouldn't have had any releases at all. Quite harsh, yeah. Sad, probably. I mean, I guess that they wanted to make sure that they could show something. Which is, of course, in their full right. But still, it's kind of an icky aftertaste for me.
Yeah, I guess the only way to really get the European scene to contribute to a US party is really to give them some incentives. And I think this one proved to be quite popular. And I think most of them, the seniors, were quite impressed that NVIDIA is actually stepping in and really doing something instead of just, you know, sponsoring a competition, for example, like the Intel Comp. So they really bring more to the table. And I think that's probably something that lets some seniors quite feel a bit that they need to give something back, like we discussed beforehand. But yeah, I mean, I think entries, like we know that ASD, etc., are going to enter there. And I think that shows, or actually, this shows that it paid off for NVIDIA as well.
Yeah, but that's what I mean as well. I mean, NVIDIA does something new as it is with the whole Envision thing. And then they wanted to make sure that they got their stuff in. So they just kind of helped the demo scene by giving away stuff that they would work for their party. And
yeah, I could imagine that this is actually having a payoff as well for other, you know, parties. Because
yeah, as we've seen.
With the people having better equipment, they probably more likely going to be producing something again for other parties.
That would be very interesting indeed to see if it actually pays off. And the thing that kind of bothered me as well is I saw that showreel that Gloom made.
Yeah.
And it's like all high-powered PC entries, like the best of the best from the last 4 years, basically. And you're kind of setting a standard in that. I mean, the demo compo, even if it's going to be good, it's not going to be all productions like that. So I kind of get the feeling they're reaching like really high up to like show like this is what the demo scene is capable of over a time stretch of a few years. But they don't say that.
Well, yeah, but it was the same thing with SIGGRAPH. I mean, people are, you just cannot show a C64 intro at SIGGRAPH.
But for SIGGRAPH, it was kind of only showing. There wasn't any like competition involved, and yeah, SIGGRAPH only did it as a bit of information. So they showed the best of the best. Fair enough. Good stuff. Even though if you want to show indeed a proper demo scene show, you should also include some C64 and some Amiga. But for that reel, I mean, Starstruck could have easily been put in that reel. And stuff from TBL and stuff from Mad Wizards and even some Commodore 64 stuff from Boost Design is designy enough. But I mean, yeah, I kind of get the feeling that NVC and NVIDIA is like really reaching up, like completely showing like, this is what we're capable of. Look at all this good stuff. And then in the end, they're going to have a competition with like probably quite some good entries. But yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to be what people will expect that are there.
Yeah, probably not very representative of the scene as a whole, but still probably very representative what a scene can achieve as a whole, you know.
No, it's probably the message they want to convey is like, if they want to show like the demo scene essentials, or like this is probably only demo scene, their talent or like knowledge. And
I think it's more, I mean, it was a bit like this with the SIGGRAPH people as well. I mean, they want to show people what you can do in real time, regardless of what time stretch you produce the productions in. And in the end, it's just about, you know, really showing people this is possible, you know, as a hobby, but in real time, etc. And I think really people get a kick out of this. NVIDIA in particular, of course, is interested in the real-time bit, I mean, obviously. And I think the whole event as a whole, in my opinion, is very much targeted towards high-end visuals and the exchange of people involved with high-end visuals. So yeah, I mean, it could be probably even questioned whether the Envision thing is actually a competitive event for SIGGRAPH. I don't really know what their plans are in the long term.
It seems that the whole Envision thing is indeed kind of some kind of answer to SIGGRAPH.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit more community oriented though, but you know, exchanging dialogue, etc. And I think that can be pretty interesting for demo scene people as well, to have exchange with people from the professional world, and you know, how they can probably feed some info back into the demo scene world. I think it could be pretty interesting. But I think it's remained to be seen whether that's actually going to happen or not, or whether the demo scene itself will be quite isolated at the event itself.
Yeah, I guess, so, because maybe I'm a bit bitter in that whole aspect, but Demo Scene always has been like kind of the weird kid in class, and this whole reaching, this whole showing, I understand that you want to show what we're capable of, absolutely, because there is some beautiful stuff being made in the Demo Scene. It's amazing, yeah, mind-blowing real-time graphic stuff, but it is quite an acquired taste as it is, and I feel like that this is a bit, I'm still a bit wary, I feel like it's kind of getting utilized by men in shiny suits that want to sell graphic cards and battling in the graphic card war that's raging, fair enough. Especially with Intel now going to participate with the Larrabee, and there is quite a struggle for new technology going on. So NVIDIA wants to have stuff to show, I mean, and I can't blame them for that. But I'm kind of weary about the whole Demo Scene participation in this whole thing. But then again, I might be bitter. As it is.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see how that goes with this whole Envision thing taking place early next week.
Yeah. Demo Comp is going to be like Tuesday night for us, I think, which is dreadful.
I hope we will be out with this podcast beforehand. I hope we will be really screwed.
Okay, we're going to some music, as our studio manager tells us to do. Also,
he's telling us to shut up, I guess.
Yeah, we should break. This is good. This is what we have for Gen 4. Some Brantley music, maybe? We already had some Brantley. Some NVIDIA music.
Yeah, which one could we play? Should we play Mustagin?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Let's play Mustagin, the song to the demo that wasn't necessarily an Envision invitation, but a bloody good demo from Panic, from Breakpoint.
Yeah, so let's hear it for Panic.
Yes.
This whole...
Right back.
Monk asked Polgar, "What is Buddha?" Tolzan said, "A tongue." Thank you.
We're back once again in the Zine podcast with our very special guest of the evening today, the man known in Hollywood as the visual wizard, Kevin Mack, welcome.
Yes, thank you very much.
Welcome in the
show. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thanks. I'm glad we made this with all the time zone differences and all that.
Yes, an international radio event. Yes.
We really took some time for this, didn't we?
Absolutely, but worth it, I guess. First time that I'm actually talking to somebody that won an Oscar. It's awesome in itself.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I highly recommend it.
Okay, I'm going to try really hard.
Well, excellent. Well, for those of you who don't know, Kevin Mack is a visual effects supervisor at Sony Pictures Imageworks. I'm getting this right, hopefully.
Yes.
He won an Academy Award and worked in lots of movies, from Ghost Rider to Speed Racer, The Abyss. We saw some in the movie database. That was like...
Yes. I go clear back to Airplane 2.
RoboCop 3.
Yeah, I worked on that one too.
Excellent. So,
really exciting.
Quite an impressive resume right there.
Oh, thank you.
So, how come that you basically got into the demo scene, or at least came across the demo scene at some point?
Well, I was really just an artist to begin with, and I still am. I keep making art, and I started out as a painter doing abstracts and whatnot in college. I've been an artist all my life, so I wound up doing visual effects for a living, and I got very interested in computers for making art, kind of before it really was a viable option for visual effects or anything. It was really pretty new when I got into it. So when computer graphics took off for the visual effects industry, I was kind of in the right place at the right time, because I'd been doing traditional visual effects work, matte paintings and miniatures and whatnot, and I had a bit of experience there. But I'd also been doing computer graphics just for art, for making my own art. I've been making, abstract animations and whatnot, procedural models and, L systems and all kinds of crazy stuff for making images with the computer. And it was really my son who is into the demo scene, and he turned me on to it.
Really?
Yeah, he was into it. He's a computer guy and far smarter than I am. And he reads everything about computers and the whole scene, and so he knew I was into abstract stuff, and he's into it as well. So he started showing me demos, and when he first showed it to me, some of the things, I was just blown away, and I was like, what is this? How do they do that? So little by little he educated me, and I still have a lot to learn. I learned a bit at SIGGRAPH from you guys, I'm pretty into it. It's very exciting.
Cool. But what was the first demo that you saw that you got shown?
I'm not sure, because he showed me a bunch like in one day, so I'm not sure. I know that Farbrush was in there. There were a few from Farbrush, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, that's great.
I couldn't tell you, and that was the thing. Like, when he first started showing them to me, I was really into them, but I didn't really know what the demo scene was, and I couldn't figure out, well, why are these people making these things? You know, these are cool, but I know from experience that making abstract art kind of stuff, a lot of, there isn't much mainstream awareness of it. And he kept referring it to it as this thing, like the demo scene, like it's some kind of official thing that people do, and I just was really surprised to find out that it existed.
Right. Secret society, kind of.
Yeah. Very so, cool.
And you're doing a lot of abstract art with mathematical inputs as well. So can you maybe explain a bit how you create your art that you don't do like for a living, but more for a side?
Yes. Most of what I do happens at the shader level. I do a lot of different things, so it's kind of hard to just sum it up. I do a lot of procedural stuff. I do a lot of rule-based stuff. I'd say one of the main things that my things have in common is that they use a lot of turbulence or random functions or noise functions, and so I combine a lot of those things in strange ways. I will do odd things like a divide, which you wind up dividing by zero, which generally people frown on, but I have found that you can get very interesting results with dividing by zero. As long as you don't only divide by zero, you get some interesting singularities that result in bizarre discontinuities in images.
Right.
I think this is the first time I actually hear somebody talking about dividing by zero in a positive way.
yeah. I came at it all from a, you know, I was just an artist, so it was more of a visual thing for me. So because I started into the computers pretty early, there wasn't anywhere you could go to learn it, and I was kind of just I was committed to figuring it out. So, you know, I learned to program a little bit, and it didn't take me that long. It only took a few years for me to realize that I would never be that good at programming, but I think it's helped me a lot to know about programming and what can be done and so on. And the other thing is tools emerged that allow me to do basically programming, but it's node-based, and I don't have to remember syntax and search through lines of code to find where I mistyped a colon and whatnot. I can just see a graphical representation of the code. I still write pretty elaborate expressions at the end of the day, but, you know, it's weird, too, because it's kind of a hybrid. I don't work exclusively with mathematical functions. A big part of what I do is done by hand. So a lot of times what I'm feeding these functions are paintings that I've made, generally in the computer, but they're images to begin with. So it gives me a little bit of I tend to avoid the purely mathematical. I find adding a little element of human-generated component, just it helps to, make it more interesting or disguise how it was done, you know?
Do you usually start out with a painting approach, or probably start with some patterns, some mathematical patterns first, and then add visual elements that you paint, or what is way of developing is to do something?
Well, I work, that's one of the things I like to do, is I like to work all the elements simultaneously. I mean, not literally simultaneously, but I'll be working on images, I'll be painting images, and then I'll work on the functions. And I generally test the functions with, I have some standard images that I use to visualize the functions, and those are very, very simple because it helps me to see what the function's doing and to get my head around how to adjust the functions. It's an awful lot of trial and error and an awful lot of artificial selection. I make a lot of stuff and throw most of it out, and it's, I'm really into the thing of using these random functions and different things, which they're at least partly contrived in that I have some notion of what they're going to do, but I'm mostly interested in the things that are just kind of a fluke that I stumble onto. And I'm always finding these things where generate a bunch of them, and there's one in there too that you just go, my God, how did that happen?
And sounds like demo coding.
Yes, I was going to say the same. Like, probably most demo groups end up the same way.
But the best effects are also.
I really like that.
If I can ask, because you attended SIGGRAPH, you were in the panel.
Yes.
Was it the first time that you met up with demo sceners as well?
Yes. It was really fun.
How did it go?
I thought it went really, really well. The guys on the panel were fantastic. You know, everybody just seemed really interested. That we had a big crowd, and people were really into it. And the guys showed some demos, and we talked about the demo scene a little bit. I kind of wish it had been longer, because it just seemed like we just were getting started, and the crowd really seemed to want more and to know more.
How many people were approximately at your speech there?
You know, it's hard to say, you know, they're bright lights and it's a big room and all the seats aren't filled.
Right.
So it's kind of scattered, but I'd say it was in the hundreds, you know, hundreds of people.
Okay.
Nice.
Excellent.
Good exposure for us.
Yeah, absolutely. People were really into it, and it was great, you know, showing the demos. And then I showed my opening animation for SIGGRAPH, which cut from the same cloth. It wasn't rendered real time, but it's abstract and in quality, and it's more just about the visual experience and the audio experience.
Are you much into syncing, basically, as well, between visuals and audio? Is that something you strive for as well in your animations, sir?
Definitely. Certainly for the SIGGRAPH piece especially. I think it depends on the sort of what you're trying to achieve in the end. I do these, well, I'm working on a piece right now that is a little different in that it's a very slowly evolving piece, and it's kind of more of a, like an ambient track would be. It's kind of a relaxation art piece that, you know, you could have on your plat. You're having a dinner party or something, and that one's really just designed to go with kind of chill music, and rather than having it being something that you focus on completely.
Right.
Sounds like Chimera. That's also basically a very slow, ambient, moving demo called Chimera, which is pretty controversial in the demo scene. Some people really liked it. Some people really hated it because it was. Oh, but it sounds like that. Interesting.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's another avenue. It's kind of part of the fine art thing. I'm trying to get some shows in galleries that show video art and that kind of thing, and maybe sell. I guess they sell limited edition video art. It's hard for me to imagine who buys that, but you know, when you can download all these demos, I don't know. It's a strange world, the art world. But anyway,
Tried it before. I heard that some people were thinking about having a gallery with screens showing demos as well as moving art idea.
I think you guys could clean up. I really do, because it's that seems to be get extra credit. It was when the thing you're selling is actually a program that's generative, rather than a recorded video of something you made. They really like that, like programming as art. That seems
galleries,
to be,
you mean? Or?
Yeah. There's a whole kind of a scene for that now.
Because I would imagine that galleries are very traditional, but in that case they aren't, or?
Yeah, well, it's a very small subset of the art world, but there's some pretty high-end galleries that are starting to sell that kind of thing and specialize in that kind of work. And I keep hearing from people, I sell these prints on canvas that are large and really pretty traditional, or trying to be somewhat traditional in their format. You know, they can hang in any gallery or anybody's living room. But and people keep saying, oh, you do animations, man, you ought to get on that, because you know, animation art and video art is all the rage in the art world now.
Okay.
But I have not met these people yet, so...
we should get into that.
We should, yeah. Let's make some notes.
Yeah, well, let's open a gallery or something.
You seem to have the right contacts.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that at all. That's a tough one. I kind of thought I could maybe use my notoriety in the visual effects world and my Oscar and all that to sort of... as borrowed interest to get me some attention in the fine art world, and I found that if anything it works against you, because as an artist you're supposed to be starving or dead or something. So
yeah, that's it, of course, because what you do would then of course in the art world be the complete opposite of art in a harsh way, maybe. Do people see it like that?
Yeah, I think I can imagine something like that happen. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think, you know, success in one area of the thing, if it's commercial, they figure you're not as committed to the fine art, or I don't know. I'm baffled by it personally, but I certainly understand the difference. You know, it's been a big difference for me. I love doing visual effects, but that's a way different process in that it's so collaborative and everything. And what I love about making my fine art and why I've always kept doing it is that it provides me with an outlet that is, you know, it's all mine. It's just, you know, nobody's telling me what to do. I'm not aiming to please anybody, but folks that would like it anyway. So
you sound very much like a demo scener in that aspect. Because demo scene is basically about that as well, like just doing what you want to do and make anything that you want to make and just show it, and no rules, no boundaries, nothing.
Yeah. To me, that's what makes it fine art and not commercial art. So I would really think of the demo scene as fine art, and boy, it's a lot of the stuff I've seen just blows my mind, and I think would kind of blows away the stuff I've seen in fancy galleries and whatnot.
That's nice to hear.
There's always been a major discussion within the demo scene whether demos are art or not.
There's of course always the whole explanation of art, and is it because it started out as just coding effects and showing it on computers back when there wasn't really that much going on computers.
Mm-hmm.
And it evolved into more and more people making ideas, and now you see it happen now, especially in the PC, where demos, yeah. I mean, we know technical limits and those are not really that important anymore, so people start focusing on design and more messages and conveying emotions and ideas, which makes for very demos as well.
Yeah, it's the one thing I'd say that is kind of maybe a cultural difference or something, it's hard to figure, is the whole collaboration thing. You know, I guess there's some one-man bands in the demo scene, but from what I understand, they tend to be, you know, whole teams of people.
Yes, yes.
And in the fine art world, it's a one-man deal. It's a solo effort. Although that's really not true, because a lot of the most successful artists have big staffs of people working for them. Yes. It's just at the end of the day, it's one person's name that goes on it, and the other people get paid a salary or something.
They get some credit, but yeah. It's more group focused. Always has been, like, everybody has
a
staff.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's something true in the film business as well. I think a lot of people don't realize how collaborative the film industry is. Because it's set up in such a way that the directors and the Directors Guild is so powerful that the way credits go and the way the industry works, they really kind of just sell the idea that it's one guy's vision or one guy's film.
Do you get some freedom when you make something for a movie? What is it that you didn't make, that you create?
It's different on every project, and with every director, every filmmaking team has a kind of a different way of working. There's some cases where you're kind of just executing the idea for somebody, which generally it's not all figured out, so there's a lot of decisions to make and whatnot. But I've been very lucky because I've gotten to work with folks who are really collaborative, and in many cases a director is responsible for so many elements of a movie that they can't possibly do them or even make all the decisions. So if they find someone that they can trust and that they relate to creatively, more often than not, they're pretty thrilled to have somebody just take it over, whatever that aspect of the thing is. So I've been lucky that way, in that I've had directors kind of go, yeah, whatever you think is best, just do that. So that's pretty cool. And then there's other directors where it's really cool because you get to collaborate with them and they have really cool ideas, and it's just fun. They're just fun to work with. They're brilliant people, and you want to learn from them.
That's got to be Tim Burton.
Tim was, he kind of he was happy to just have the stuff solved once he knew you were going to do the general idea that he was looking for.
Because I would imagine because there's some people in the demo scene who always said, well, if someone could make some good demos, then it would be Tim Burton.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a real artist. He's not just a filmmaker. He's an artist turned filmmaker. And at one point I asked him about it. I was like, God, how do you get to make films? And he said, well, I'll tell you what, if I was coming along right now and trying to make films, they would never let me make films, because he said, I'm just an artist. I'm not a traditional filmmaker. And the stuff, I've just been really, really lucky and got away with some things early, and now I get to get away with stuff that they would never let anybody else get away with.
So that was the first part of our talk with Kevin Mack, our talk that lasted quite long, so there's more to listen to later. And this will pretty much wrap up our second show.
Yes, but I expect that we'll be back very soon with the second part, so you won't have to wait very long, but we'll give Vincenzo a break with the editing tonight.
Yes.
Otherwise, it will never get done.
So stay tuned, and the next episode will be online as soon as possible with more information, more talks, and more insight on demo scene and maybe even movie scene and all the stuff that we can think of. So thank you very much, Axel and Vincenzo.
Well, thank you, and see you soon in the next one.
Yes, see you in the next one. Cheers.
News, infos, stuff from all over the sea.
Sci-Sign, the radio show, with your hosts, Axel and Aki.